from the clubhouse to the tailgates and beyond.
Fly ball, deep left, gone!
Welcome to Brewers Weekly. Here's your host, Dominic Cotroneo.
Nearly a perfect homestand for the Brewers. They go 5-1 against two first-place teams, leading us into a great Brewers Weekly, a pitching-heavy Brewers Weekly this week. I'm Dominic Cotroneo. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program tonight. If you're listening live on WTMJ, reminder, these are taped programs, but there's a visual element to it over on the YouTube side of things that you can watch live on Friday morning over on ESPN Milwaukee. Kind of all over the place, but it still works in audio form. Brewers All Access is the name of the podcast. You can make sure you don't miss an episode, including our post-game shows this weekend from the Central Road Trip, the Twins and the Cubs coming up this week. So what are we going to talk about? That 5-1 homestand, of course. And today, the Woodpeckers coming out to play as the Brewers win 7-1 over the Padres. We'll talk a lot about Kyle Harrison. We'll talk to Kyle Harrison as well and have a little mini breakdown on what's really working for him so far this season. We got to spend plenty of time on The Miz. And The Miz debuting, sneaky, a new pitch. And finally, we'll talk about the offense, talk about what the Brewers lineup looks like now that they have Churio and Vaughn back. Yelly missed the last two games, and Pat Murphy reiterated post-game. He expects to be in there this weekend. Yelly feels terrible that the back has flared up right when he comes back, but we will react to that as the weekend goes. But for instance, let's start with today, the Brewers winning the rubber match against the Padres in really dominating fashion. 7-1. It really wasn't even that close, quite frankly. The Brewers kind of laid their sword down late in the game once it became a bullpen contest. Kyle Harrison was solid. I wouldn't call it great. I think he would agree with that statement too. You'll hear from him in just a little bit on this program. But he goes five. The key on that is not walking a batter, and he'll talk about that in a little bit too. But the Brewers draw four straight walks from Griffin Canning, the starting pitcher for the Padres. They get that crooked number they did not get on Wednesday night against the Padres, right? They had multiple threats on Wednesday, and we talked about it in Wednesday's Brewers Extra Innings that, hey, you can be mad at Abner Uribe for losing that game and having the blown save against Gavin Sheets, but the Brewers only scored one run, and they left eight runners on base in that game. They were not doing the same in this one against the Padres. And it's another oddity game for the Brewers as an offense where they actually score seven runs without hitting a homer. They are now 4-0 in such games. They're the only team in baseball with that many wins, with that many runs scored, without a home run. And again, I will continue to bang this drum. I'm not sitting here complaining the fact that they don't hit homers. Of course, everybody wants them to hit homers. And again, Pat Murphy addressed this postgame too. He believes with Vaughn back, Churio had a rough day today. He completely, all the nice things we were saying last week about him with the lack of chase and the more patience, that went out the window today. He got a little bit over anxious. First time he failed to reach base in a game since he returned from the injured list. But everybody else in the starting lineup today reached base for the Brewers, which is number one. Hey, I mean, no one's ever going to complain about that. Number two, when you're doing it with walks and when you're doing it with the value of just getting on base, and I look at somebody like Sal Frelick or I look at somebody like David Hamilton, they're not going to hit the ball over the fence that often. And I know Sal's got a couple of tanks this year. That's not his job. Same with David Hamilton. His job is to get on base and manipulate the defense in order to see a ball go through the hole like he did today, create havoc on the base paths, getting to third on a throwing error from Griffin Canning in a wacky second inning. Back-to-back three spots for the Brewers to start this day was exactly what the doctor ordered. Even on a day where, you know, Terang, he draws two more walks today. His batting average continues to linger around 300. William Contreras didn't hit Gavin hit, but he had two more walks. The Brewers had seven walks today as an offense against the Padres. And this has kind of been the number one fear for anybody that's been following the Padres closely, sort of saying they don't have enough pitching. And I know they're 25 and 18 now. There's going to be a day of reckoning coming for them because, I mean, I know they're getting, at some point they hope to have Joe Musgrove back, coming back from his Tommy John surgery. It has been a slow build after missing all of last season for him. They just signed Lucas Giolito. He should be returning to their rotation coming up. Nick Pivetta is hurt. Michael King pitched great on Wednesday, in my opinion. He's their bona fide number one. But aside from that, it's looking a little tough down there in San Diego, despite being off to a great start. But the offense isn't supposed to be the problem. And I'm still sitting here marveling at the fact that Fernando Tatis Jr. still does not have a home run this season. I mean, we joked about it on Tuesday. I wasn't on that show, but the fact that Joey Ortiz had a home run before Fernando Tatis Jr., that's not meant to be a dig at Joey, but just I don't think anybody expected that for a perennial MVP candidate. And Tatis is approaching 200 plate appearances since his last home run, going back to last season, of course. But the other thing the Brewers did very well, Machado has not been himself in this series, or let alone in the last the start of the season. His batting average is below the Mendoza line. He's known as a slow starter. The Brewers held him to just 2-for-11 this series with no extra base hits and a pair of strikeouts for the normal Brewer killer in Manny Machado. Jackson Merrill was ice cold this week. He didn't even get the start against the lefty Kyle Harrison in Thursday's finale. You look at what the Brewers were able to do against San Diego's key bats is the story. Now, I know Gavin Sheets hit the home run in Wednesday, but Miz was great. And we'll talk plenty about Miz coming up in a little bit too. But what I see from the Brewers in this whole homestand, right, sweeping the Yankees, we've talked about that all weekend long. I would encourage you to go back and listen to those post-game shows for more direct analysis about those individual games. Of course, Miz with his great start on Friday. Then the Brewers coming back and get this walk-off sack fly on Saturday. And then Bryce Terang with the walk-off home run on Mother's Day once again. The way I see that series, and this whole homestand in particular, it was put very well by Steve McGargy of the Associated Press. This was a yardstick series, and it coincides with the fact that we're at the quarter mark. You know, we're a quarter of the way through the season now for the Brewers. This was game number 41 of the season. And there's still a doubleheader to come to make it 42, and you've got maybe some doubleheaders this week given the rain that's coming, but 41 games into the year, the Brewers are now 7 games above 500. And I don't care about the standings at this point. And in fact, I'm recording this before the Cubs and Braves have even started their game here tonight as they get ready for their finale of that series. But what I see from the Brewers, I'm doubling down on my take that I said on opening day and leaving spring training, that they got 4 plate appearances this weekend from Christian Yelich, right? Vaughn and Trey are back. And quite frankly, they weren't the carrying of the offense. Vaughn had a good series against the Yankees, but it wasn't like they were carrying the offense. Terang obviously continues to be on an MVP caliber level right now. What this lineup does is it's now looking more unrelenting, right? I know people can make their thoughts about shortstop, but even yet, there are reinforcements on the way, whether it be Cooper, whether it be Jet Williams. We can talk about the outfield. Sal being off to a slow start, but showing signs of life lately. He got a hit. He got robbed on a weird play at second base. I can't remember the last time I saw Sal have a hat trick, though, strikeout-wise, which I think is a little odd. He got fooled by a knuckleball late and a splitter late from Waldron and Matsui. But the lineup looks and feels better when you have everybody in there. I mean, that 1-6, like we were talking about in spring training. I mean, Bauer's isn't even starting today's game, right? You go Churio, you go Yelich, Contreras, let's say Bauer's, Vaughn, and then let's go ahead and throw in Yelich somewhere in there. I mean, that's a really good 1-6 for the Brewers, regardless of the opponent, regardless if it's righty or lefty. That's not what they did today. They hope to get Yelich back here coming up this weekend against the Twins. And, of course, the midweek series against the Cubs. We'll have plenty to talk about with those. I'll be actually on all 3 of those post-game shows coming up next week. So, yeah, you're gonna hear a lot from me here pretty soon. So the Brewers win a 5-1 homestand against 2 first-place teams at the time. It's a yardstick series. Like, how do you measure up? How do you look at yourself? And it doesn't get easier. The Twins have been a surprise. Yes, they're not going to make the playoffs, but the Twins have certainly been a very surprising team to be hovering around the 500 mark. This point in the season, their team will get worse once the trade deadline comes around. And then what else is there to say about the Cubs? The first time you get to see the rivalry renewed, Cubs come here in late June. Then you don't see them again until September, which will be dramatics, to say the least. And these two teams look very, very different by the time that day comes. But we'll talk about that later on once we see the Cubs next week. Let's break down Kyle Harrison. Let's hear from him coming up on the other side of the break. A reminder, this is a taped edition of Brewers Weekly. If you're listening live on WTMJ, if you're in the podcast, don't worry. Sit tight. We got more to come. Kyle Harrison and breaking down what's been so successful for him so far this season. Here, right here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ, and on video on ESPN Milwaukee's YouTube page. Back in a moment after this.
Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Welcome back. I'm Dominic Catronio. Brewers Weekly rolling on. How about the day for Kyle Harrison? 5 innings, 5 hits, no runs, no walks, 7 strikeouts. He threw 99 pitches. 65 of them were strikes now for the lefty from the Bay Area. The season numbers now, remember, the innings are low because they had to skip a start and they were slow to build him back up after the collision at first base when he fell on Gary's poor throw back in April. But now that was 8 starts for Kyle Harrison. 4-1 record, 2.09 ERA, 38 and two-thirds innings, 48 strikeouts. Opponents only hitting .229 against him, a whip under 1.2. He's only allowed 3 home runs this season. And oh, by the way, Kyle Harrison is only turning 25 in August. Another young stud the Brewers have unearthed. And I tweeted this earlier today, but I do mean it. We should send a thank you card to the Giants and to the Red Sox for letting the Brewers do it once again with the magic pixie dust that is the car wash of Hook and Henderson, the H&H car wash, as Pat Murphy calls it. But he was excited after a win today, breaking down his start despite not having his best start, but the feedback he got from the opposing hitters and getting him through today, first with the scrum and then a couple questions one-on-one with Kyle.
Kyle, what did you feel like was the kind of the best part or the key to your day today?
No, honestly, I think it was Kiefel making that key play in the first to kind of keep us, you know, not starting from down. So I think that was a huge play and really just got me on the right track to attack the zone, especially after that first inning.
Deflection.
You're a part of a really talented starting rotation. Just what did you think about what you added to through in Miz during his series?
Yeah, you know, I guess try to keep up with Miz, right? You know, that's been the thing, you know, so it's no, it's the really talented staff, as we all know. So it's, you know, just taking care of what we can do in between starts and going up the zone, especially with a lead like that. So, yeah, front up the zone with the stuff and just trust him.
Adjusting from the walks against the Yankees to having nothing today, was there an adjustment in the game plan of being able to get zero in the walk column?
Yeah, I'd say probably just moving a little slower, taking my time, taking a breath out there. Hook even mentioned it. You know, it's like I like to work at a fast pace, but there's got to be a, you know, something there to kind of keep me grounded. But yeah, definitely that was the goal today, to really attack these guys. And definitely a changeup from the Yankees series, though.
6-game homestand against the Yankees with Padres. You get a 5-1 real measuring stick type of homestand. Just how encouraging is it to do what y'all just did this last week?
It's awesome. I mean, that's what you play the game for, right? Playing the best competition and seeing how your stuff plays against it. And ultimately, you know, that should give you more motivation to attack the work got during the week. And just game time's game time. So just go out and have fun.
You talked about attacking the zone. How much easier is it when you're the offense spotting you, you know, 6 in the first 2 innings?
Oh, it's everything. It just basically opens it up to where, you know, here we go. Like, no free passes. Let's attack these guys and get the boys back in with y'all. Yeah, that was the whole plan for today.
How was just on the start on that ABS challenge?
It was great. I knew it was there, you know. Great on Gary's part tapping it, but yeah, definitely knew that was there. So really convicted with that one.
Caught today is a quarter of the season already.
Than
the
crazy. Wow.
What have you learned about the group, this club?
Man, a lot. You know, I think it's just been a, you know, we don't really get hung up on one game. You know, I think it's more of just that mindset of never letting up, you know, and just working relentlessly during the week. And ultimately when game time comes, it's let's go out and have fun, compete. And all the work that you did during the week should take care of it. So, but no, I mean, from the offense is stepping up and pitchers are throwing well. So good spot to be.
Is today a good example of that, bouncing back after a tough one last city?
100%, you know, and I think that's, you know, really just no understanding what I did wrong last start. Maybe working too fast, certain pitches, not doubling up on them, not trusting my stuff. So an emphasis today would have been like, you know, missing with the off speed and then coming back with off speed for a strike. So that was huge today.
From your stuff, from the perspective of when you arrive and you got the game plan to where you are now, could it have gone better? Like how has the stuff reacted to being in the Brewers at work?
Yeah, like you're saying, this outing today, like could have got, like definitely, I think it could have gone better. Certain counts I knew had guys beat fastball counts, like especially 0-2, and then was like just missing a spot a little down low, and just giving them a chance to get a hit, you know. So it's been now I'm understanding, like, you know, what I've done wrong, and ultimately building on that and trying to just stack it against other hitters. But yeah, that's the area, like, I feel like I'm growing on, and I shouldn't be giving up five hits, you know, when my stuff's like that. So,
well, like, would games like that have spiraled in the past, do you think? Do you think you've matured as a pitcher in those situations?
100%, you know, runner at second, right? Runner in scoring position just takes one knock to kind of get things going. So it's really just buckling down in those situations. Hey, breathe. This is where I'm going to attack this guy. And just to focus on executing. And that's it, man.
And I know we just were enamored with the changeup all spring training, right? But the slurve has really become like a real weapon for you. How has that pitch changed into this season versus what you've been previously?
Yeah, I think just most importantly, like, I really only used that thing, and, you know, before I got here, just to like steal a strike, you know, and wasn't really given a lot of confidence to throw that thing in the zone, throw it, like, get chases on it. And here it's been like, you know, like, Hookie and Jim will tell me, oh, that's like Chris Sale, like, you know. So it's like just like even that emphasis of how good that pitch can be and trusting it and throwing it in certain counts I wouldn't, it's been really cool to see. And it just opens up a whole nother alleyway, you know, just tunneling off that here. And I thought the changeup took a step forward today, but the slider's just, I've been ripping it with more conviction and trust in it per se.
So let's look at his player breakdown page here over on Baseball Savant from today's start. First thing that jumps out to me, a little bit more than usual on the four-seamer, you know, 58% on the year. He 5 points higher today. The other thing that jumps out, the velo was up today too, despite being a day game, despite being on regular rest on that fifth day in the rotation, right? Fastest average velo for a game in his career. And I think it's another thing we need to point out here for a second too. Kyle Harrison, when you extrapolate it out, right? This is his third season in the big leagues, I understand, but he's only made 45 career starts in the big leagues. So about a season and a half's worth of time pitching. Now, granted, the clock's a little bit ahead of that. He's turning 25 in August, like we said. But for somebody like Harrison, he is still very green and very new to pitching at the big league level. I know he has a huge prospect pedigree, but he's still learning so much right now, and we'll explain one of those things that he tweaked later on. When I look at the slurve, the movement actually had a little bit more bite than usual. He added a few more inches of induced vertical break today, so maybe that explains some of the command with two strikes that he didn't quite have with two strikes. He'd go back to a heater, and the Padres were able to put it in play and that sort of thing. But sometimes when I look at Harrison's numbers and when I look at what makes him so dynamic, sometimes it comes back as simple as, hey, the command, not walking a batter, as you heard him talk about. It was everything. How different the start was against the Yankees when he had four walks. He couldn't get past four innings in that one. Today, yes, I know he was at 100 pitches through five. There were some foul balls. Those long first two innings certainly didn't help him in today's contest. But to see he's really getting by on just three pitches, and to use the fastball as aggressively as he does, there were some foul balls and some pitches that maybe he was frustrated by, but I don't anticipate that being that high of a number moving forward. He does have a very unique fastball, like we talked about last week, where it has both carry and arm side movement while throwing it very low from a deceptive height. I know these are all words and big words that I'm talking about, but I'll get to some of the more analysis here when we talk about what he's using it, when he's using it, and how he's using it. The thing that jumps out to me about the slurve in particular today, he wasn't great first pitch strikes overall, 50% first pitch strikes, but he was 3-for-5 using the slurve when it was his first pitch for a strike. And, you know, he said there in the interview, you know, maybe previously teams try to view it as more of a get me over pitch. Now I'm using it as an out pitch. I'm using it as something that can get swing and miss and something that can keep hitters off balance. When you look at, this is a chart now that I'm pulling up here over on Baseball Savant, that this is how often he's throwing a slurve when he's ahead in the count, right? So an 0-1 count, an 0-2 count, 1-2, when the pitcher is ahead, how often he's throwing the slurve. When we go back to 2024, his rookie year back with the Giants, he only threw his breaking ball about 20% of the time. And this number doesn't even include today, 32% of the time, up 12 points from when he was a Giant to when he is a Brewer, using the slurve, truly showcasing it as a weapon meant to get both sides out. That's the first tweak that we see. The next tweak that we see is a little bit easier to understand. I'm bringing up a chart now on Baseball Savant that shows his average horizontal release point. What does that mean? In simplest terms, and I'll show this visually too over on the ESPN Milwaukee YouTube page, is where are you standing on the rubber? Where is the ball getting released in space and time, right? And when you're a right-handed hitter against a left-handed pitcher, we talk about the visual of being able to see the baseball. And righties have that platoon advantage because now they get, you know, if you want to get really deep in the science on it, oh, cool. Most of them are right eye dominant. They're seeing most of the ball out of their right eye. That's, you know, if you want to get really into the biomech on all of this. But the whole reason lefties have trouble with righties is sometimes that horizontal release. And one of the things that you can tweak and create deception around righties is being able to show off a different angle than they're used to. When you look at this chart, look how low it gets for his horizontal release, meaning zero is right down the middle, straight down the middle of home plate in relation to the rubber. Okay, that's zero. And anything over, we're using positive numbers here just to make it simpler, but anything over means that the, you know, you're a foot wide of the center of the mound, right? That's where he's going, 1.63. You know what's ironic about this start on August 28th, 2024? It was against the Milwaukee Brewers. So visually here, you can see where he is on the mound. He's favoring the third base side of the rubber. Heel is pretty much all on the rubber on this pitch too. And this was the first pitch of the game, mind you, and Churio hit a flyout. But you can really get an idea of almost all of the heel there on the rubber, maybe right into the logo of his cleat that you can see. There's a little bit hanging off there. But now let me show you the difference to this season. Okay, now this is a different view, but see now the toe is hanging off the first base side of the rubber, completely over on the third base side of what this is able to do to create some deception against right-handed hitters. Now, the other aspect of this is it allows him to work in to right-handed hitters. You listen to any pitcher, specifically lefties, but especially any pitcher saying, hey, if you're throwing fastballs, you cannot be afraid to go inside. Now, some guys, of course, when we're talking about scouting reports, say, hey, you don't want to go inside on this guy. That makes sense. I think of Andrew McCutchen of being a guy like that. Like, I'm not throwing Andrew McCutchen inside. I'm not throwing some of those strong hitters inside sometimes. But when I pull up the heat map of fastballs for Kyle Harrison against right-handed batters today, I'm showing it now here on YouTube. Look at this beautiful rectangle of fastballs in to righties. There's a few in the middle of the zone, I know, but then a lot of chase upstairs. That's where the, you know, he wasn't as sharp as usual today, is where that comes in for him, why he struggled getting swing and miss, why he struggled putting batters away with two strikes. But I am loving this because that release point that we just showed you a second ago, see the difference where he's now, you know, he was up as high as almost 3 feet wide, whereas 2 years ago, it was about a little over a foot and a half. So he's essentially doubled the width that he's presenting the baseball by moving across on the rubber to give a new look to right-handed hitters that now are getting this fastball up in their kitchen that has some arm side run that's blowing up bats while also being able to dot that upper outside corner with the heater. Never looks like a strike, or if you are going to swing at it, you're going to miss at it. You're not going to do a lot of damage to it. This is another example of the Brewers understanding, here's our plan. We want him to steer the boat on this, and kudos to Kyle for being so receptive to all of this, and it's working. I mean, I think it's another success story of the Brewers identifying something in their scouting department, in their player development, saying, like, last year it was Quinn Priester, this year it's Kyle Harrison, sort of a reclamation project to say, we believe in this guy, let's make a couple of tweaks, and let's make it work. And now this homestand, the Brewers starting staff, they go undefeated 3-0. Their ERA is under 2, 1.95. 45 strikeouts to just 9 walks during this homestand. Kyle Harrison made 2 starts, and Jacob Mizorowski made 2 starts. And we're going to talk about the Miz coming up next as Brewers Weekly rolls on after this on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Let's talk about everyone's favorite pitcher right now, and that is Jacob Mizorowski, because he continues to wow the place. He continues to just shine, and I know it's early to be talking about awards and all-stars and that sort of thing, but what a story it's been to the start of the year. And talking to his pitching coach, Chris Hook, and talking to Jim Henderson, talking to everybody involved with the Brewers pitching staff, Juan Sandoval, that what Miz has done this year, he's actually opened their eyes. And they've really made sure to give him as much praise as possible, because I think we've underreported, myself included, about how frustrated they were with him, you know, this time, maybe even spring training last year. Now, to set the stage here real quick, and then we'll break down Miz so far. Remember, prospect, you know, spring breakout and everything, Yours Truly was on the call last year, where you have the top prospects play against another team's top prospects. We televised it on MLB Network, and I was on the call for it, and Miz was getting the start in that game against the Reds prospects. And Miz was not sharp. Miz was not, was kind of all over the place. Kind of what we're used to seeing from Miz on some of these stat lines down in the minor leagues, and trying to see, you know, man, why can't he lock it in? And Chris Hook's talked about it a handful of times, and even Miz has talked about it too since then, that the post-game cool-down meeting was not a cool-down in any sense of the imagination from Chris Hook. Chris Hook had to give him some tough love. Chris Hook decided, you are too talented to be this ineffective in a prospect game. It shouldn't matter, you know, who you're facing on the other side. You should want to beat everybody you face. And Miz is a competitor like that, and he responded well to it. And he took the coaching to heart. He made some adjustments. He made some mental tweaks too. And what I see with his delivery right now, it is so synced up. And we talked about this in Friday's episode of Brewers Extra Innings, where there's going to be always this fear and sometimes valid sort of looming. Oh, man, when is he going to blow? When is he going to blow? But I know arm injuries feel all too common these days, and it's true. This is a baseball-wide thing. But the reason why Miz is cramping, and the reason why Miz continues to, you know, not being able to finish starts, is because he is working on trying to keep his body as healthy as possible while maintaining 100 miles an hour. Think of it like an engine, okay? Think of it like you're driving your car down the road. And where does all the power from your car, if you need to make a pass on the left driving down I-94, right? Well, when you hit the gas and you send the engine forward, you got to make sure you have gas in the tank, well lubricated. You got to have, maybe you got turbo in there. Maybe you got a V8. I don't know, whatever it may be. But the engine is built to handle that. If I'm doing that in a, you know, a Prius, it's going to hurt a little bit more. It's not made to, oh, you want me to go? I'm going to giddy up. Now, what Miz's body has transformed over the last couple of years becoming a professional, conflicting reports about how much weight he's actually put on from this time last year, but it's added weight. He's even added pant size in a good way, meaning he is putting pounds on the lower body. And the engine of a pitcher is the lower body. That's where that analogy all comes in. So when we hear about cramps, and when we hear about issues with him, you know, dealing with the lower body, like sort of not firing like it's supposed to as fatigue sets in, you got to remember, he's doing something freakish. Nobody sits 100 miles an hour for six innings of a ball game. That engine is getting work. That engine needs service. But let me be honest, and let me point this out to you again. Would you rather him come out with elbow soreness or quad cramping? That means the body is being pushed to the limit from the lower body. He is using the muscles he is supposed to be using, like they talk about in Friday's show with the biomechanics, how precise everything truly is to keep an eye on Miz, to make sure that he's healthy, and to generate the best amount of velocity that his body can put forward. Does that all make sense? It's a little deep into the weeds when we're talking about it, but a reminder, that was only the second time he's ever completed seven innings in his big league career. And oh, by the way, he's doing it against the future Hall of Famer Manny Machado, multi-time All-Stars, and Fernando Tatis Jr., and fellow Rookie of the Year candidate in Jackson Merrill. I mean, he's facing a good lineup over there last night, or on Wednesday night. And what I see from Miz is a repeatable, incredible extension and delivery with this low arm slot. It's amazing syncing up his delivery the way that he has over these last three starts. And, you know, he also is very defensive about the cramping. And I was joking with him earlier today. He's like, I promise you, if you have a camera on me the entire game between innings, I am chugging water. It's not just, oh, I'm not drinking any water, I'm dehydrated. Again, it's a reminder, he is pushing his legs to the limit every fifth day. And I think that was so amazing, too, about Wednesday's start. It was only the second time this season he's gone on a five-day cycle. You know, 4 days of rest, pitch on the fifth day, traditionally like you see from starters. And we expected the velo to be a little bit lower. You know, it wasn't going to be the same adrenaline of a Friday night against the Yankees. But to still see him topping out at 103.3 miles an hour, to still see him averaging 100.6 on the fastball, the kinetic chain is moving very well right now, and the strength is staying on. Now the challenge is keeping it on as the summer months come, more sweat comes. You would be surprised at how much weight pitchers and catchers lose throughout a season. Position players too, but a different level when it comes to pitchers and catchers, given how much they sweat, how much they push their body harder for longer periods of time than what the position players do. But I do want to point out something that we learned about Jacob Mizorowski when it comes to his repertoire and coming to not just using the heater. I want to show off this new cutter and slider combination. That's right. He has multiple of each. And if you've listened to me on the show, you've heard me say, well, his slider really behaves like a cutter, so we should probably call it that. He clarified to me today, and I got confirmation from Chris Hook, there are two types of the pitch. He has both a cutter and a slider now. And we can measure this using horizontal break, using induced vertical break. Now, disclaimer, hand up, not a pitching coach, not a pitcher. But I think I trust my eyes pretty well on a few of these, and I can trust the metrics on a few of these pitches as well. But let's go ahead and look at a few of these pitches that Jacob Mizorowski has thrown, this new cutter, this tight slider, and how you can identify the differences between the pitches. So the two ways that we differentiate a cutter and a slider. Number one, a slider generally is going to have more horizontal break. That's not always the case, but for Mizorowski's case, that's what we're going to be monitoring. Number two, a cutter is always going to have more induced vertical break, meaning more carry on its way to the plate. And in case you're not familiar, a cutter is still technically a cut fastball, just a tiny bit of horizontal movement and meant to fool you. It's not necessarily a swing and miss pitch like we've seen it be for the likes of Emmanuel Clase and Corbin Burns. It's more like a Mariano Rivera where it's meant to get off your barrel. Now, Mariano was the goat of this, being able to break your bat and that sort of thing. But Miz is using the cutter as a get off my heater, get off my slider pitch, because there is a difference in the two. Let me show you one of the first ones he threw this past homestand. This one was to Ryan McMahon back on Friday night. Again, minus one on the horizontal break. What does that mean when you look at the chart, when you look at how much it moves? It's just one notch over to the left of center, moving 1 inch to the glove side from the pitcher's perspective. And it's got an 8-inch induced vertical break of carry. So one more time, watching it from Miz. Just a tiny bit, coming way over from the side. Pretty good offer. Now let me just go ahead and show you a slider. This one to Manny Machado back from Wednesday night.
Through, especially as fatigue sets in a little bit.
Popped it up. It was registered as a curveball initially, but this is coming in at 5 inches of glove side movement with only 2 inches of induced vertical break. And he missed his spot. I think William wanted this further outside, but because it starts, you know, on the inside edge of the batter's box and ends up down the middle, that's not where you want to live. But because it's such a different look, batter wasn't ready for it. And just to give you the other last bit of this and what makes it so different from the curveball, here's a curveball at 8 inches of glove side movement and negative 8 inches of induced vertical break.
Only two teams in the West over 500.
This was a great
swing
one.
Swing and a miss.
Falls below the zone. It was the second time facing Merrill. He had struck him out on one of his best cutters of the night, too. And the other thing I love here, when you're watching William Contreras, yes, he sets the target at the top of the zone. That's a visual cue for Jacob Mizorowski to say, throw through that pitch and the curveball is going to bend below the zone. Because look how quick William then gets his glove down to the dirt because he knows his pitch is going to be below the zone if it's executed properly. Beautiful, beautiful curveball. So just give you a quick, you know, refresher of how different the curveball really moves to those two pitches. Speaking of Jackson Merrill, let's go ahead and pull up one of those really good ones he threw to him. In fact, it was the one that struck him out to open up the contest the other night. So here is the cutter that was registered as a slider, but it really is a new little wrinkle, new little something for Jacob Mizorowski.
It's
moving
quite a bit
forward.
Different,
again, a 1-2 count.
Six,
Williams
seven,
set up
the
in,
attack,
dotted on the inside half. Because when you're gearing up for 102 and you see just a little wrinkle out of the hand, you're thinking this is the bigger slider and this is going to miss inside. And Merrill just completely shut down because he was absolutely fooled to see this little cutter. Again, 2 inches of glove side movement, 8 inches of induced vertical break. And then finally, let me just give you one more palate cleanser on the cutter here, or on the slider, I should say. This one to Austin Wells was a very good one last Friday night. 3 inches glove side, negative three on the induced vertical break. Now, what makes this pitch so dynamic, I know William was set up more down the middle. If somehow, Jacob Mizorowski develops a backdoor slider, which for a right-handed pitcher to a left-handed batter is A, one of the hardest pitches to execute, and B, one of the most unhittable pitches from the perspective of the lefty, that is when he reaches a whole new level of superstardom. But great slider here.
Like,
again, using the backdoor, dotting it lower outside
players.
Corner. It's kind of cuttery, but it's 93 miles an hour, and it's a very, very good slider. And one more time, let's go ahead and look at a couple of balls in play against the cutter against the Padres this week. This one against Gavin Sheets, again, the cutter. This was 7 inches of induced vertical break.
In the big
came
moments.
Right up in his kitchen. That's more like the Mariano one, right, where it's just coming inside. You're thinking it's the heater. By the time you're ready to make contact, it's in on his label, right? Look how great that is of that shot where it's on his label. He's expecting to make contact, and it's a weak squibber over to second base. And one more time, seeing Jackson Merrill. This one had technically 0 inches of horizontal movement, so gyro movement with 8 inches of induced vertical break. It certainly moved given from the angle that Miz is throwing from. Love the development to see the cutter, a true cutter, go with the slider. A new wrinkle for Jacob Mizorowski. In on lefties, not let everybody just sit on heater. And let me just go ahead and tunnel them all together here. This is something for the YouTube audience, but tunneling them all together where you see the curveball below the zone, the slider on the back door, and the cutter in on the hands, and then, oh, by the way, 100 at the top of the zone. Good luck. Doesn't even need a changeup if he's doing this. Yes, everything's moving glove side, but when it's moving that fast, you have no time to make a decision. So that's our little breakdown on Miz, learning something new from these last two starts from him. I think he's really excited about it. Chris Hook's certainly excited about it. His next start would be scheduled against the Chicago Cubs at Wrigley. So stay tuned for that one. All right, let's get to our final segment of the show here and talk a little bit about the offense. Not as long-natured here, but had a good chat with Garrett Mitchell today. He had a good day at the plate. Talk about the rest of the team, too, here in a moment on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ and ESPN Milwaukee.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Shocker, I went long on the breakdowns of. I was just so excited about Cal Harrison, so excited about Jacob Mizorowski on a pitching-heavy episode of Brewers Weekly. Welcome back. So I've only got a few minutes here to talk about the Brewers offense. And I just want to point out, and I talked about this in Wednesday's post-game show on Brewers Extra Innings, but I really think Garrett Mitchell's close, and he feels the same way. And we were joking about it today in the clubhouse that, hey, two doubles. One of them was a gift from Ramon Laureano, losing a ball in the sun and in the wind, but still, Garrett's really happy with how he hit the ball going to the opposite field. He made a couple of small tweaks with his stance and with his path that he's trying to clean up right now for this upcoming road trip. But when I look at Garrett Mitchell, I'm going to look at this body of work right now for him. He's got 141 plate appearances in the show. He's only hitting .216. And still, while only hitting .216, his OPS is .671. And I just want to remind folks that it's hard to hit a baseball, first and foremost. The MVPs that we're so used to seeing, and I know Terang has been phenomenal so far this season. I just want you to take a guess. What do you think league average is for slash line? I do this from time to time to remind folks of how hard the game really is. Well, league average, batting average, .241. Yes, Garrett is well below that because of his strikeout rate. League average on base percentage, .320. So Garrett is beating that by 23 points. Now, slugging is way down for Garrett, but also across baseball. League average slugging right now is .388. And I think you and I can both agree there is more in the tank there for Garrett Mitchell with the slug. And to see a couple of doubles today, one legit off the wall. I mean, he also went oppo homer to deep left field.
that certainly gives me excitement for Garrett Mitchell moving forward. And then he hit a ball well, but the wind kind of held it up. As the summer months get warmer and as things move better, I wonder how close Garrett can get to a 400 slugging percentage by the All-Star break. Now, home runs certainly help with that, too, and he's still sitting on just one dinger so far this season. I really think there's more in the tank for Garrett Mitchell, and I really believe the other thing about today's game, the other thing that he did well is he went up and got an elevated fastball for his first double in today's game. I'm going to pull it up here on video so you can see it on the YouTube side of things. Remember, we've talked about this plenty, that is his kryptonite for opposing hitters or opposing pitchers to attack him with elevated fastballs up and away. It wasn't quite top rail, but it's a pitch that has given him fits in the past. He let it travel, hit it 100 off the bat. That was the double off the wall at 24 degrees. So I'm just pointing out, I'm okay with being wrong on this. I'll stick my neck out saying, I think we're due for a Garrett Mitchell hot streak here. And I gave Luis Rengifo kudos in yesterday's show. Reiterate those kudos today. Another couple of hits for him. He's hitting 290 over his last month or so since breaking that 0 for 20. He has been a solid role player the Brewers have identified to help their club. So that is going to do it for our Brewers Weekly here tonight. Thank you for everybody who's watched or listened. A reminder, Friday's game got moved up an hour. It is now a 6:10 first pitch Friday night in Minnesota. We will have a post-game show for that one. We will also have post-game Saturday and Sunday, in addition to pre-game shows against the Twins. That will do it for Brewers Weekly. I'm Dom Catronio. We'll see you next time, and keep on swinging.